Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Well, Governor Patterson yesterday announced the doubling of the projected budget deficit for next year just since his last emergency budget address in July, the result of the financial system crisis, obviously. He's now projecting an unprecedented $47 billion deficit compared to projected revenues over the next 3 years. And all of this is happening just as Patterson has lost his closest advisor, Charles O'Byrne. May not have been a household name in the state of New York before resigning under pressure last week, but he was so close to Patterson that a New York Magazine article 3 weeks ago, before O'Byrne's problems came to light, said, "For all intents and purposes, Charles is the governor," a quote from an unnamed Democratic Party operative. The writer of that article joins us now. He is Jeffrey Gray, New York Magazine contributor. Hi, Jeffrey. Welcome to WNYC.
Hey, good morning.
And the governor dumped this Byrne resignation on the public, as politicians are wont to do, on Friday afternoon to lose it in the weekend news cycle. So for people who have no idea what we're talking about, what happened last week to Charles O'Byrne? And for that matter, who is Charles O'Byrne?
Charles O'Byrne is kind of one of the most unique characters in the Albany drama, a drama that was always kind of been very boring and known for. Nobody really knew what it was known for because no one really knew what happened there. But he, his arc, his career arc is so unorthodox. He started off as a Jesuit priest. Well, he started off first as a lawyer coming out of Columbia, and then he went into the Jesuits, and he was a very moral-based person. And when he became disillusioned with the Jesuits, he entered politics, and he worked for Howard Dean. And it's kind of unclear, actually, what he did for Howard Dean. You know, all the news reports said he was a speechwriter, but that's kind of been been debunked. So it's a little bit of a mystery as to what he did there. Now, after he got done with Howard Dean, he was looking for a job, and he was out of work. And Patterson was looking for somebody, and he went to Ethan Gedo, who's a Democratic activist and who's Howard Dean's New York campaign manager. And he said, "Do you have anything?" And Patterson also was talking to Ethan Gedo. He said, "Well, I actually have this guy, and now, listen, you know, he doesn't have the traditional resume, but he's actually a brilliant guy, and I think you'll like him." They met, and they got on.
How long ago? So that would just be a few years ago?
It was about 4 years ago.
Oh, I'm surprised to hear that it was that recent. I get the impression from this coverage and in the papers the last few days about, oh, he was so close and so personally close, like they went to college together or something.
Right. Well, actually, they did share an alma mater. And, like, these guys have, like, you know, the most, you know, different backgrounds. David grew up the son of a Harlem senator, and O'Byrne grew up in New Jersey in a very kind of Catholic family. But they have these kind of, like, these very interesting traits that kind of make them, in my opinion, like, very close. I mean, they're both outsiders. They're both they both went to Columbia, and they're both intellectuals. They love the three-dimensional chess game, and they like talking about it in the abstract.
So this quote in your article about O'Byrne being the governor for all intents and purposes, it was just an unnamed Democratic operative. Does he speak for many in Albany, though?
Yes. You know, everyone who's dealt with Charles O'Byrne, if you put it simply, like, if you want to get to the governor, you have to go through O'Byrne. One allegation that I heard recently is that Charlie Rangel, dean of the Congress, wanted to get David Patterson on the phone. And he called David Patterson, and he got a call back from Charles O'Byrne. And he's like, who is this? You know, who is this? I've known this guy my whole life. So everything went through O'Byrne, and that's the way he ran his inner circle. And for the most part, in the early months of David's governorship, it was wildly effective for David. He's notoriously known to have organizational problems in his staff. Legendary in Albany of not being able to fire anybody and keeping people on that have kind of misguided him, or he hasn't shown up to the places on time. But something in the glue was working with O'Byrne, I think.
He was, among other things, the organizer-in-chief?
The organizer-in-chief, the bad cop-in-chief, the disciplinarian-in-chief, and the priest-in-chief.
But David Patterson fired him or pressured him to resign. Why?
I think there's a couple things for David. For what his people tell me is that the news was just too bad. It was just too ugly a story, and it was a week for O'Byrne that actually kept on getting worse. In a lot of ways, in my opinion, O'Byrne made the story worse.
It's about back taxes at its root, right?
Right. You know, according to the what O'Byrne disclosed himself is that he had failed to pay taxes for about 5 years, and to the tune initially of $200,000. And as the week progressed, he kept on opening himself up to more disclosures, I think in the spirit of transparency. And unfortunately, like, that didn't really work, because what happened was it turned out that he was off about the numbers. And his lawyers, you know, claimed that he had suffered from non-filer syndrome, and it was
now he did suffer from clinical depression. It came out, but he said that, and that became such a source of derision over the last week that there was an actual psychological condition called non-filer syndrome. It's like the Twinkie defense, but it didn't really exist, according to anybody who knows anything.
Right, and it didn't. Even if it did exist, it was comical, and it made Patterson look bad. You know, if this is the guy he's trusting, you know, how could somebody run the state and at the same time fail to pay the most, like, elemental function of being a citizen?
So now what?
So now it's high drama again in David Patterson's world, as it always is. You know, he's in this position that he never thought he would be in, that he never asked for, that he that he arguably would never have run for, because he just doesn't have the tools to, you know, at least until now, he did not have he was a legislator, he was not an administrator. And now he's facing an unprecedented $47 billion deficit.
Legislator, not an administrator, running for the top job. We have a few others of those right now. Did you notice?
I did.
But, right, he was not running for governor. He was not seeking that. He thought, he was happy to take the lieutenant governor's position when Elliot Spitzer offered him the spot on the ticket, and they won. But Patterson, I think, has been exceeding expectations, especially on the budget.
Indeed. You know, he's been able to do something that Elliot Spitzer was never able to do, and that is build one narrative, in a narrative that people make sense. You know, he's only been talking about the economy. He's been early on it. He's been sounding reasonable on it, and he's been very disciplined. And a lot of that, I think, was O'Byrne keeping him in line. Because he has a kind of tendency to kind of move, as one operative also told me, it's like jazz government with David Patterson. You know, he's very freewheeling and he's very improvisational. But what his termination of O'Byrne, or accepting the resignation of O'Byrne, really means, I think, is that David is actually kind of growing into the role of governor. Because throughout history, he has had notorious trouble of firing people, okay? He has basically asked his staff to fire people that he couldn't, or has asked people outside his staff to fire his chief of staff. It's this problem because of his disability, he's dependent on more people than others, and he develops these kind of relationships with other people that he becomes dependent on them. You know, it's not like a C&I dog, but he sees the world, you know, arguably through the lenses of the people that he surrounds himself with.
So who's the next Charles O'Byrne? And I don't even mean just simply who's the next chief of staff. Mm-hmm. But down the pecking order, who are the other people who are so in his inner circle that he can rely on them like that?
Well, it's unclear. I mean, I think that, you know, finding the next O'Byrne or finding the next secretary is almost like fishing for, like, a 6-inch bass with, like, one eye. You know, it's like, you know, it takes so many unique skills to actually be able to understand the 3-dimensional Albany chess game. That I think they're going to have trouble actually finding. I think they are having trouble finding that one person who can actually have the relationships with everybody and the capital and the goodwill and the genius to make it all work. Inside his, who is he going to now? Who has his ear? From what I understand, his inner circle is in somewhat disarray, and he's thinking about maybe making changes. And what he does, what I've learned about the governor in doing some reporting and talking to people who've known him for years and years, is what he does in the end is he always goes to the people he trusts the most. You know, in one of the stories, I noticed the name of an old high school girlfriend that he had who was giving him advice. And I think that he'll also rely to some degree on the advice of his father. You know, in tough times, he calls two people first. The first one traditionally is his wife. And the second one is his father.
Jeffrey Gray, New York Magazine contributor. His article in the October 5th edition was about David Patterson. And one of the things that he wrote in there was how Charles O'Byrne, according to some Albany insiders, was in effect really the governor, at least for certain aspects of the administration. O'Byrne had to resign under pressure last week. Here's a clip of David Patterson speaking yesterday about the budget deficit.
Don't get me wrong. There will be hard and painful cuts. There is no segment of this budget that will not be cut.
So now, with these staggering numbers, you know, like all these other kinds of staggering numbers that nobody has ever seen anything like, he's going to have to make some really hard decisions if he's really going to balance the budget, which he's hanging his legacy and his hopes for actually getting elected to the job in 2010 on, obviously. And so his allies are in education. His allies are in health care, the big pieces of the New York State budget that he's obviously going to have to find ways to cut. How does he do it?
Well, in the first months of the year, why he was so good was because David was this great personality, and he was very personable, and everybody liked him. And O'Byrne was very abrasive and very bullish, so they had a perfect good cop, bad cop routine. Now that gets trickier. And what he's going to have to do is, I think, sort of perfect on what he has done. He's kind of taken a really new approach to leadership. He doesn't want he doesn't see himself in the Spitzer mold. He doesn't see himself as bullying. He's a conciliator, and he's actually a creative problem solver in a lot of different ways. So I think what he'll need to do is, in essence, already do what he's doing in an elevated sense, and bring the leaders together and figure out a way that they can all look like heroes in this.
And he has good relationships with the leaders on both sides, and so.
As they cut, the relationships change, and you see some kind of tough statements coming from the Republican majority leader Dean Skelos, and I think that he doesn't have the relationship with Skelos that he did with Joe Bruno. If only Joe Bruno would come back, and David could have his one of his biggest pals in Albany again.
Or the Senate, everybody is saying, may in fact go into Democratic hands for the first time in decades after next week's election. Then he would have Malcolm Smith or whoever actually gets elected as a majority leader under Democratic control. How big would that be for this goes?
It's huge. I mean, in 2 weeks, the whole landscape could change. And it's good news for David Paterson because he has an ally. He has more Democrats on his side. It's bad news for David Paterson because he also has an ally. And, when the budget gets cut in this kind of way, you know, it's really kind of going to be every man for himself. And
one issue is that after his dire warning yesterday, he left it to the legislature to propose solutions and cuts, right? He's up there talking about $47 billion deficit to close over the next 3 years, how the deficit is now 25% of the actual budget for the coming year, which is unbelievable to think of having to cut one out of every $4 if it really works that way. But he declined to propose. And some people are going to look at that and say, you know, you coward, you're passing the buck.
Right. How he would look at it is he's like, you know, I'm frustrated with this because the first time I tried to do this, I made the cuts. I take the personal hits and I cut my administrative budget and I made the proposals and I gave you, you know, $1.5 billion to pick and choose how much you wanted. And so he was playing the nice guy in the first battle of this what would be an epic, epic war. And so I think now he's frustrated and he's like, you know, look, why don't you guys decide first this time and try something different. I think that he is getting frustrated with...
So play that out for me a little bit, because there's going to be a special session of the legislature to deal with this crisis in a couple of weeks. He waits for them to propose. Then what? They underpropose? They propose cuts that don't hurt their constituents as much, but that don't really close the gap. And then he's the hammer and says, hey, come on, get real.
It's a game of chicken. You know, and it's like who's going to blink first and who's going to put their cards on the table first. And I think that this is his kind of way of like trying to negotiate tougher.
At the same time that he's looking for a new chief of staff.
And looking for a whole new – when the chief goes, okay, now the one thing about O'Byrne is that he was able to keep a very tight inner circle. He was able to keep people away from David. He was able to keep people that he trusted even, because O'Byrne in a lot of ways – my take was that he was a control freak, and he was very concerned about powerful people coming in and disrupting his relationship with the governor.
So let me ask you about one in our last minute, or really one group, the Campaign for Fiscal Equity. Paterson was very much on the side of that whole lawsuit process, which wound up mandating a lot more money for the New York City public schools. But education is a lot of the budget. Now the Campaign for Fiscal Equity is already out there saying, come on, we just got this money and we need it for the future of our kids. Don't cut education.
Right.
And?
And it's almost impossible not to, or not to consider it, or for that not to be on the table. It's almost like Patterson wants to go back to Elliot Spitzer and be like, "What were you doing by trying to, you know, give all this big increases to the school system?" I don't know. He's got to find like creative solutions to these problems that might not have good answers.
All right, Jeffrey Gray, New York Magazine contributor, wrote about David Patterson a couple of weeks ago. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Some of you may be interested in my Wednesday night television show where web video meets the issues. Tonight we'll focus on last-minute campaign videos that use fear as their central message. That's tonight at 7:30 on CUNY TV, Channel 75 on the New York City cable systems. And coming up next here on WNYC, it's 30 Issues in 30 Days, Issue 28, Who Would Be the Best Commander-in-Chief? Stay with us.